This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. More than 55 million people live with dementia globally, and dementia is one of the major causes of disability and dependency among older people. And yet, there remains a stigma towards dementia, and this affects their ability to lead dignified lives. So how do we break past that stigma to ensure that care partners are able to support the person living with dementia? Do we need a different approach to dementia care? So that's what we'll find out today from dementia care expert Teepa Snow, who is joining me in the studio today as she is here in Malaysia for a visit from the United States. Teepa, thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm so glad to be with you. It's been a pleasure and surprising and yet not at the same time.
I'll definitely want to find out what you think, what you've observed in your days here. But I guess I want to talk about dementia more generally first, right? I mean, globally, what kind of burden does dementia and dementia care actually place on the population?
Well, we've got two burdens. We've got the known and we've got the hidden. Mm. And I think the hidden is more concerning to me than the known. The known, yes, we know that dementia is really hard on the person living with it, mm-hmm. and hard on the person who's doing the primary care support. Mm-hmm. But we also have the hidden burden of the family that's mm-hmm. having mom spend a lot of time with grandma, or the spouse spending a lot of time with the other, the family member, whoever it is, being away from other opportunities and other roles and involvement because this is taking a lot, or being concerned about a long distance situation that we miss often. Like, I'm getting these reports about mom from another city. Do I need to go? I mean, do I need to step away from what I'm doing? And then we have the economic hidden costs of someone having to make the choice. This is getting to be too much. I can't do this on the off hours. I can't do this just, I'm dealing with crisis after crisis. I need to step away from my job and do this. Mm. Or I need to hire somebody to do this. How do I find people to do this? Because she keeps firing everybody I hire. Mm. So there's emotional costs, there's financial costs, but there's also cost that is hidden. And the hidden cost is what's happening not now, but in future. So, you know, my own health and well-being, if I'm a care partner, and how I miss how much I'm not taking care of myself, how much I'm missing what's happening to my kids or mm. my spouse mm. or my relationships or my job mm. until it's a crisis. Mm. So there's a lot of crisis management that I think is underrated. And then we totally miss that approximately 80% or more of people living with dementia are not identified in the early state at all. We're in the middle of the disease by the time we're noticing what is going on here is not mm-hmm. quote unquote normal or typical aging. So there's a huge missed opportunity, and it's a big, big number. Mm. So that's a challenge if mm. we're missing it. And we only notice it when it's so obvious that it can't be anything else.
Mm. I'm going to use that to segue into my next question, mm-hmm. because a lot of people sort of assume that lapses in memory, things like that, are part and parcel of aging, right? Mm-hmm. But what have you observed in terms of society's perception of dementia, the misconceptions that people still hold on to today?
That it's all Alzheimer's. I mean, mm. that everything that's dementia is Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And so the second most common type of dementia, Lewy body dementia, typically profiles more in the area of mental health issues, where I might be accusing you of doing things that you haven't done, mm-hmm. delusional thinking. I might have visual disturbances that I see people or children or animals or things that are not there or shadows moving, mm-hmm. and I have trouble sleeping at night. And so I'm up all night. Well, if I'm up all night, guess who else is up all night? But we put that down to she has problems with sleep, so we need a sleep med, or we need to do something about that. But we've totally missed that it's a dementia, mm. Because we're thinking, well, she remembers stuff. Yes, she does, but her brain makes stories up about it. We also have vascular dementia, mm-hmm. which given what I know about Malaysia's hypertension and diabetes rate.
Which is very, very high.
Yeah. That's one of the highest risk factors for both vascular dementia, but it also contributes to Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And then we have frontal temporal, which is head injuries. Mm-hmm. And I rode over here, and I've ridden on the road some, and it's like, oh, the number of little motorbikes floating about. When we talk about older people in dementia, the number of young onset dementia, which means before the age of 65, it's 5 to 10% of a population. And that, again, is undetected too often. And it's just, well, it's because they've had a head injury. Well, it's because she's depressed. It's because she's anxious. And it gets reduced to a symptom rather than a condition that is going to impact the rest of her life, but also those around her. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So it's big. I mean, this is the challenge, is there's so much misinformation and missed information about this thing we call dementia. And people's, well, it's an old person's, no, it isn't. It isn't, actually. There are actually juvenile dementias that children can develop. There are midlife dementias. There's genetic, but then there's non-genetic. So it's really complicated, and it's everybody wants it to be real simple, and it simply is not. Mm.
You touched on the impact. How does this sorts of misconceptions impact the individual and their care partners, especially when we talk about missed information?
Yeah. So just out of curiosity, how many people do you think when they go to the doctor just typically are, we say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and do a baseline cognitive screen on you, because it's one of the ways we would know very quickly if you had physical health problems, maybe if you had some glucose intolerance problems, if you had some diabetes that, or some heart disease, or maybe some thyroid condition. One of the most sensitive measures of some of the health condition shifts is in your cognitive ability. But what we don't do is set a baseline. That's very rare to get a baseline. So I say to you, okay, as a simple example, I'm going to have you name as many animals as you can. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep track of that. And then next time you come back, we'll do it again. What I shouldn't see is a huge shift in your ability to come up with the words and react to the request. If I start seeing you go, well, animals, I know a lot of animals. Why do you need to know what animals I know? Mm. Is this some kind of test? That should raise my alarm bells, because that's, I mean, last time you did it, you weren't concerned. Now you're getting super defensive about it. And I say, so I have a question for you. How has it felt lately about coming up with words? Have you noticed anything? And what do you mean coming up with words? Well, like if I were to ask you, what's the thing that you get when you go to Krispy Kreme? So, for instance, what would you say if I said, what do you get when you go to a Krispy Kreme shop?
Donuts.
A donut, yeah. So you were able to come up with the vocabulary word right away, and you were able to comprehend everything I said to sort of put the puzzle piece together.
But if someone has a delay in that.
Yeah, like what, and you'll hear often one of the patterns is, well, what would I get at Krispy Kreme? Well, I don't go to Krispy Kreme. Mm. And it's like, fair enough.
But that would be dependent on A, the person seeing a physician regularly, and B, seeing the same physician as well, right?
And the physician being curious enough to ask the question.
Yep.
Yeah, and having a baseline. Mm-hmm. So this is, what you know, the hidden disability is that it goes on and it goes on and goes on until I go, I can't think of the, when we were at the place, you know, the thing that I'm talking about, when we got the stuff, the whatchamacallit, the, and so what, by then, if you think hard about it, I can't come up with a specific noun in an entire sequence. And yet I look at you and I know you and I go, I know you, don't I? You're the one that does the, when you talk, the, because I got verbs, you talk and you listen and you talk. Are you that the one that does that?
But they can't quite place the noun.
I can't get any of the nouns. Now, that may be a dementia called primary progressive aphasia. That's part of the frontal temporal family of dementias. But the problem is nobody's asking these questions. And typically we're middle disease, middle change, and which is 5 to 8 years in before we even begin this conversation. And the person has lost capacity in so many areas that it often ends up then in fight or conflict because I get scared. Mm. I don't want to talk about this. This is nobody needs to know this. Why are you asking me all this? I want to go home. I don't want to go to the doctor again. And now as a care partner, it's like, well, Mom, we've got to go. No, I'm not going. You want to go, you go. And it feels, it's really hard because the honor the mom and take care of the dad. But at the same time, I'm trying.
It's going to be really frustrating for everyone.
And well, when you're really frustrated, your brain puts out cortisol. And cortisol is one of the most dangerous hormones you can have on board. And if that's not being addressed, guess who else is now pre-setting their brain for dysfunction at a younger age? Mm. The care partner. And if I'm a kid watching all this, guess who's also in distress because I'm watching mom and grandpap and or mom and dad fight and argue and I don't know what to do and I want it to stop, but I don't know how to deal with it. So now my mental health is being impacted and my sense of safety is being impacted. So we have kids involved in this mix as well.
Mm, mm. So it's a knock-on effect, right? You have the immediate impact and then the future and it goes on and it goes on.
Yeah, and I mean, my goal in what I try to do is let's switch the narrative because we don't need more generations. We've established this is what happens. Let's change the narrative because there's no point in repeating it.
Mm. All right. We'll go for a quick break now. And when we come back, I'll ask you how you view dementia differently from the rest of us in the population. On the show with me today is dementia care expert Teepa Snow, joining me in the studio to discuss how we can take a different approach to dementia care and to break that knock-on effect that we see, that we are seeing in families in generations. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. Joining me in the studio today is dementia care expert Teepa Snow. She's here on a visit from the United States. And so I'm taking this opportunity to catch her for a bit in the studio to talk about dementia care. And it is a problem that if you've been listening to our shows, you know, has been growing and is something that needs to be addressed, but we are not necessarily addressing it well. So hopefully on this episode of Healthy Aging, we can sort of give you a different perspective to this. Now, Teepa, before the break, we were talking about other people's general perception towards dementia care, right? How do you view dementia and thus dementia care?
I talk about brain changes, not brain failure. Because what's actually happening is one part of the brain may be turning off, but when that turns off, another part starts getting active. So when I start to lose nouns, I start to replace it with visual cueing. Mm-hmm. So if when I'm saying, Mom, how about, oh, I've got a question for you. Now, what if I just told you with, oh, I have a question for you? Mm-hmm. I'm telling your brain to alert. I want to say something to you.
And to pay attention.
And to pay attention. I just said, hone in on me. Mm. I'm really paying attention to you. Pay attention to me. When we go out, would you rather go and eat? And I'm signaling, like moving my hand to my face. Or would you rather go just look around and visit? Mm. So I'm adding in a visual cue to the content. So I'm giving a visual in addition to the verbal. And then when my person says, which would I rather do? I pause because it says it's taking her brain longer to take in the data. And then if she were to say, what was the option again? Eat or look. I switched up again, and I went simple word, and visual, because there were too many words, apparently, in this moment. And then she goes, oh, I'd rather eat. And then I go, eat. Just the two of us or more? Because I want to know how many people should we go out with for this to feel comfortable. And she goes, oh, I want my, you want someone else. Your friend or my friend?
So you're filling in the blanks.
I'm helping to fill in the blanks, but it's not, Mom, it's not that hard. Do you want to go out and eat or do you want to go look at things? You tell me that you want to go look at things. Do you want to or not? Mm. I mean, now what do I sound to you? Mm. Angry?
Yes.
Frustrated?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am. Mm. So my goal with care partners is to say, okay, look at the brain you have. They need cueing in ways they didn't before. But they're really good at following up on visual cues. We're really used to giving verbal. Mm. So guess who's going to get to change? It has to be us. And we need to rehearse to where it feels comfortable. Because when we're uncomfortable, our brain has to work harder. And it has to work harder, then I can't pay attention to my partner. Because I'm thinking rather than watching you. So I think what's underestimated is the value of the cerebellum. Mm-hmm. Because we actually have three brains in our head. We have the primitive brain. We have the cortical brain, the thinking brain. And then we have the cerebellum, which is the rhythm-related brain and the one we use when we don't think. Because we've already learned that stuff. So the reason I want to get people early is so they can start to master some skills on supporting someone and notice, wow, she's not using her fingers as skillfully as she used to. I'm noticing she's spilling things on her shirt. Huh. Okay. So let's look at what we can do to modify the utensil or the food so that we come up with something that makes her feel competent, not incompetent.
Mm. I guess that's the other big part of dementia care, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people feel frustrated and then they take over jobs for that individual. And mm-hmm. it's a fine line to walk because sometimes, I mean, on the one hand, you understand the frustrations of family members, but on the other hand, we also want to ensure that they have some sort of independence. How do you walk family members through that?
Yeah, so one of the rules that I have is no care about me without me. And I think that's the phrase that comes from the World Health Organization, from people living with. Mm. And so one of the things that's important is I'm here to support you in living your life. I'm not here to take over your life. So a skill that I need to develop is to be to your dominant side, which is your right side in 90% of cases, and to use my right hand to show you things in the world that we share, and then to recognize if that's not working, I need to do some thinking before I try something else. But I've got to get permission. And the tricky part of getting permission is sometimes wanting it to be verbal, but it needs to be visual. Mm-hmm. And so once I let go of the idea that I'm caring for you, whether you like it or not, and I accept that, okay, you're not liking what I just did, maybe the task I'm trying to get you to do is no longer one you have value in. So how do I switch gears and figure out what you can value and what we can negotiate? And what's coming from brain damage and what's coming from a sense of wanting to be in control or in relationship that I'm missing? What am I missing? And I feel strongly that once I accept that, okay, I've got to figure out what it's not working for you, because evidently it's not working for me either. Mm. And I tell people, quite honestly, there are some of us that are just not meant to be hands-on carers for people living with dementia. I can love you completely. I can want to support you completely. But I may not be a good match for you care-wise.
Mm. Because, and I imagine that's equally as important because you can't force yourself to do it if you can't.
I mean, because that's not natural. If it's not a good match, it's not. My mother was... She was a phys ed teacher. Mm. She was an amazing phys ed teacher, a remarkable cheerleading coach. She was an absolutely miserable care provider. Mm. And so I became my grandfather's care provider at a very young age because I was tired of the arguments. I was tired of the fighting. I was tired of him trying to leave. And I was tired of her being so angry at him and him being angry at her. And I had to live there. Mm-hmm. And it was like figuring out, how do I switch this so that we can all live together and not be mad all the time and not be scared all the time and not feel frustrated all the time? And so, you know, for me, it turned out to be a career. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would never have predicted it because at the time we didn't even know he had dementia. He was just eccentric. Mm-hmm. It was like, because back when I'm 70. So, you know, when you're 70, you go, oh, that was a long time ago. But, you know, like basically 60 years ago, because it was around when I was 10, it was a very different time about dementia. We didn't even know about it. It was like, oh, people get senile. Mm-hmm. And he was getting senile. We had no idea. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's still unfortunately the case in way too many situations. Oh, he's just getting old. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. We've crossed that threshold a while back. Mm-hmm. And you missed opportunities to involve him in. So if it ever gets to that point, Sue, and it came down to whether either I figure out how to help you eat or you get a right to refuse eating. Which do you want? If I have to force you to eat, should we keep going or do I need to stop and say enough is enough and I'll hate it? But you do have the right to say, no, I'm done. And it's like, ouch. I mean, that's a really hard thing to do. But if we don't do it when we have capacity, when it comes time, how hard is it for a daughter or a spouse to say, she won't let me help her anymore? Mm-hmm. And I've tried the techniques, because we use techniques that are going to give you the best bang for the buck. Mm-hmm. But if even that's not working, then she's saying enough. I don't want to do this anymore. And it's like, I hear you and I love you. And so I'll listen to that. But it's really hard.
Mm. How do you then have that discussion with people you work with about setting goals, about setting expectations? Yeah. Because, yes, most of us are aware that dementia is not reversible. It's all about maintaining someone at that level of capacity. But at some point, there's going to be nothing you can do. So how do you have that discussion?
It's also the art of letting go, learning the art of letting go. So we get, even if people get the idea of, I can't fix her, but we can keep it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you can't. Dementia is an ever-changing disability. And some days are good and some days aren't so good. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to learn three arts. You've got to learn the art of when there's a chance to lift the level up and she performs. And people will say, oh, I saw my mother again. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of a sudden in that moment, we were singing and suddenly she was having a conversation. And then and she asked me how I was doing and she hasn't done that in ages. And it's like, oh, what a blessing, what a joy. Mm-hmm. Celebrate the moment and then be willing to let it go. Because it was a moment. And in the next moment, how do I keep her going with the conversation? And then in the next moment, how do I let it go and be present with her as she is right now? And that is a real art form, but there's actually skills you can learn to develop the art. Like anything, like Tai Chi, you can't just suddenly go out on Friday and go, okay, I've got it all. I've mastered it. Mm. I mean, people who do Tai Chi will say you never master Tai Chi. You learn the balance, the art of movement and stillness. Mm-hmm. And that's what dementia is, the art of stillness and movement. And it's not for everyone.
So when you're working with someone to teach them different skills to dementia care, is that then a once, twice, three times, 10 times journey, or it is an ongoing one, you know, as the person progresses?
So what typically I would recommend is your thumb, your index, and your middle fingers are the skill fingers in a human hand. Mm-hmm. And so I can do skillful things. That's the median nerve distribution. And it actually allows you to button buttons, zip zippers, do things, manipulate, write, everything. Writing, you have to do it. But when it comes to strength, that's my whole hand. I use my whole hand for strength, particularly the little finger and the ring finger. So what I encourage people to realize is we need to build skills in small amounts, and then we strengthen that so that we can use it when we should. And then when I come into a new area or something, I raise my hand and say, I think I need help again. I'm running into something I haven't seen before. Because this is a progressive kind of condition, but each person will sort of experience it somewhat uniquely. Mm. So we use a lot of support. We use care partners supporting. We use people living with dementia supporting one another. We use children supporting one another. And our goal is to guide people in the support, but not to say, here, I have all the answers, because that's not how it works. It's like, so tell me what's happening, what's working and what's not. Okay, so you're finding it really hard because she says, I want to go home, and she's standing in her own home. Mm. So I want you to, okay, I'm going to ask you, I want to go home. If I didn't have dementia, what would be your first thought when I say, listen, I want to go home?
I'll just say you are home.
Yeah, and that's the automatic answer is you are home. But what you missed is I'm looking at everything around me. I'm listening to everything around me. I'm feeling everything around me, and this doesn't feel like home to me right now. And so the response is, you're wanting to go home. Do you need to do something there or you just don't want to be here? So what have I given you then?
Options.
Yeah. And guess what people like?
Options.
Yeah. And you say, I've got to do something. Oh, you've got to do something at home. Ah, make something for dinner or something else.
So it's essentially you're trying to figure out why.
What's the unmet need? Because it's always about an unmet need, whether it's a psychological need, a social need, a physical need, a physiological need. Does she need to go to the bathroom and she's embarrassed to ask? Does she need to have something to do because she's bored? Because I'm doing everything. Oh, oops. I'm doing everything for her and she's more trouble than it's worth to have her in the kitchen. We don't want to say it out loud, but I asked her to sit in the living room and watch TV because I wanted to get dinner fixed because when she helps. And so I'll often say, when dementia gets great big, try to spend less time with me so you can like me that much. Because when dementia gets big and you try to spend a lot of time, all you see is my dementia. And frankly, you sort of hate my dementia. But to me, it starts looking like you hate me. And so we need time apart. And I need a substitute partner. So one of the hardest things for us to do is acknowledge early on, I can't be the only person. This has got to change. How many fingers are there in the skill? When I said skill hand, how many fingers?
Three.
Because with two, you can't really get that to work. It takes three to actually have skill. And so when one person needs to take a break, there's still a partner. When the two of us go off and do something, I figured out what to do with the third person. When the three of us are together, we find joy and pleasure with each other, but we have options. And that's what's not the case right now in Malaysia any more than it is in the United States. There's too many care partners who are trapped in a relationship that's one-on-one because the rest of the family has said, I'm done. I'm out. It's driving me nuts.
Either that or some people are also stuck in that situation for financial reasons,
you
right?
You
only have one
you
person who can take
That's
time
it.
Off.
Yeah. And so what we're talking about then is, okay, we need a new community. We need a new family. It needs to be a made family, not a purchased family. It needs to be a made family, not the blood family. We've got to come up with a new family that's going to serve us well. So care partner to care partner. So if I'm used to care partnering and my two people like each other, then the other partner gets to go off and go do something for a bit. And I can keep the two people engaged, three people engaged. As I build my skill and realize, you know, this is something I can do. And when they're together, they have joy together. They're making tea together. We're having a great time. And I start to realize what my mom can do that she can't do when it's just me. And all of a sudden, I see my mom again for a minute.
On this show, Tipa, we often have geriatricians or even allied health professionals who work with older adults who come in and say, this is why we need communities and this is how we can leverage on communities living in your neighborhood to sort of help look after each other. Is that something you share?
Absolutely. I think if anyone thinks we're going to build institutions or build locations where everybody who's living with dementia can go... We already did that in the U.S. Let me tell you, it was a disaster.
We're seeing it happen here as well.
It's a bad idea. I can tell you from, we've been down that road. And what we know is we'll never have enough communities. And the people we bring in for service, we are not training. Even though there can be quite expensive communities, we are not preparing them for the real life care of someone living with dementia who has Lewy body plus Alzheimer's, who has vascular dementia and a primary progressive aphasia.
No two people are going to be the same.
No. And so we ask people to do the impossible with the inadequate. And instead, let's build communities where we are bringing together resources, and they're all going to be different resources. But if I have somebody who loves Tai Chi and they're willing to say, we're going to stand. Yeah. And the arms are going to come out. And you're going to hold the world with your arms. It's a beautiful world. Raise it up. You know, and so I'm demonstrating and people are following me. Then look, either we're all doing it together and we're all benefiting from Tai Chi, whether we have dementia or not, including the children. And we come into community and then we start singing and we come into community. And then when we come out of community, I've just energized brains in a way that now there's this positive force moving in the community. And I say, I could use your help. When I say that to you, Sue, I could use your help. Do you think, oh no, how awful? Or do you think, yes, me, you could use my help? And it's like, oh, I was looking for you. I need you. What a powerful message we send versus help me, help me, help me, help me. Please help me. I'm so lost.
It's a very different tone and approach.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And that's what I think is going to make the difference for us as a society.
Mm. And I guess on the receiving end, right, mm-hmm. you don't feel like you're strapped in, like you're burdened by that either.
I can raise my hand and say, hey, Sue, I need a break. Mm. Is there any way you could help me out for like an hour? I'd be happy to return the favor. Can I get you something at the store while I'm out? Mm. I brought you a gift because you're such an amazing person for doing this. I think we have lost our sense of large community and the sharing of community. And I think dementia has the potential to bring us back into community if we acknowledge I need help. And yet I can offer help. And so can everyone involved.
All right. We'll go for another quick break. And when we come back, you know, we'll continue this conversation on this episode of Healthy Aging Dementia Care. Expert Teepa Snow is joining me in the studio. We're talking about a different approach, a more positive approach to dementia care on the show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. You're listening to an episode of our Healthy Aging series. We are talking about taking a different approach to dementia care, a far more positive approach that hopefully will have everyone feeling in a better mindset, whether it's the person with dementia or their care partners when it comes to dementia care. And so joining me in the studio today is dementia care expert Teepa Snow. She is visiting Malaysia on a trip here from the States. So I'm catching her, getting all this tips and also her ideas on how we can do things differently. Teepa, I am curious, you know, you've been doing this for quite a while. Mm. Has your work also changed your worldview on dementia?
Oh, definitely. I used to, at some point, view it as a health condition.
Mm. A lot of people still do.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's long gone. It's not a health condition. It's a life-changing condition. Mm. And it's life-changing for all involved. And I don't see it as this black hole that people fall into and I'm losing my person. I see my person changing, and the question is, how quickly can I adapt and believe that, wow, okay, I have different opportunities now. I'm going to grieve what isn't, but unless I can open my mind up to what is, I need to take a step back. Because until I'm ready to do that, I probably am not the best care partner. And I'll be asked to be, but until I get to that place, it's going to be tough. Because this means I have to, and the person living with dementia will often, I mean, I work with a lot of people, and I have friends who are living with dementia. And their comment typically is, when I first found out, I was both relieved and it was terrifying. And I fell into a black hole for anywhere from, and people say 2 weeks to months to 3 years to 5 years. And I'll ask, what brought you out? And some people say, I got tired of living in the dark. Other people said, I found new purpose. The other people say, I realized I was the same person the day before I heard the diagnosis, and I was doing things then. Why am I not doing them now? And sometimes it's someone around me that helps me see that there's still life, and there's a lot of life to be lived. So we need to figure this out, not just grieve the loss. Let's figure it out. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
What do you still find challenging about your job? Do you?
Oh, yeah. That each person is unique, and every time we have a situation, there's usually at least 3 out of 5 minds that I've got to address with old data and old impressions and old information about dementia.
So it's changing mindsets.
It is. It's like helping people believe that people living with dementia can learn really quickly. Mm-hmm. And they do learn really quickly. So let's not make them angry at us because they learn very quickly that they don't like us. Let's decide, so you're not sure why you can't drive anymore and you were thinking that I'm the one that said you can't drive. Wow. I hate that that happened because I hear you. It feels like I made that choice. Yeah. And not driving is really hard. Was there a particular place you really wanted to go, or is it simply that it feels like I'm stealing something from you? Yeah. I hate that because this is super hard and I would never steal something, and yet it feels that way. So learning these skills, and those are the acknowledgments. We have to acknowledge this feels differently for you than me. Mm. But once I know that, then why am I holding on to it? there's no point in holding on to it because that's a grief. And I've got to let it go so I can be with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then in those situations like that you mentioned earlier, Tipa, where you know, some people are just not meant to be care mm-hmm. partners, is the discussion then with them to look for someone else who can do it? How do you even, because I'm assuming it's not going to be easy because this person has assumed that mantle that, no, mm-hmm. I'm going to do this.
Yeah. So but my usually first comment is, tell me what you still like about the person you're caring for and caring with. And there'll be a pause. Mm. Do you know it's a red flag when somebody goes, well, what is there to like? I mean, I lost my mom a long time ago, and I don't like this. This is so hard. Do you know how many refusals I've had? Do you know how many times she's thrown stuff at me? It's like, sounds like it's really awful. Yeah, it sounds like it's not a good place to be. Why do you stay? Okay. The second answer that is a yellow flag for me is, well, because I love her. And I say, absolutely. Absolutely. That is why you're doing it, but that's not what I asked you. Asked you what you still like about her. Because it turns out the human brain is built in such a way as the primitive brain, the amygdala, that survival part of the brain. If it doesn't get something it likes every day in a relationship, it doesn't want the relationship because it diminishes it. Mm-hmm. And instead, it will be looking for things that fulfill it, which means all too often for carers, I'm seeking a quick fix. I need caffeine. I need a med to help me sleep. I need a break. I need to get out of here. I need a cigarette. I need to eat. I need to not eat. And so it's like, wow, we're in panic state, but we don't recognize it. And so when somebody says, I love her, I'll say, yeah, tell me what you like. And usually there's a long pause. Mm. And that's when I know, okay, let's talk about what is working with you guys and what is not, because we can build on what's working. But I want us to think about changing one of five things. Mm-hmm. The place where care occurs. So we change the place. Maybe that will help. We change people. We change the person as the primary. We change the things that are around, like props. What is being involved? What is going on for that person? And programming. Could it be the programming? What are you offering each other? What are you doing that's working for you? Anything? And then the last one, are there other possibilities that you've never thought of? Because we've got to get out of where we are, because where we are is just going to destroy both of us. And I'll say, we've got to figure it out. So do you feel like you can, or do you need a break first? Mm. All right. Well, then we've got to figure out respite. So let's figure out an emergency plan for right now. Well, there isn't anyone.
Do you usually encounter pushback from people when you tell them that maybe something should change?
Well, yeah, because even if it's terrible, the status quo is always easier than, so what if we try something? Mm. I want us to try something for a couple weeks. Can we at least try one thing? And guess what I usually get? What? what are you talking about? Well, I'm talking about, I want you to try something. I'm going to give you something to say and something to do when this comes up, and I want you to try it. I want you to tell me next week how it worked for you. Because what I'm going to try is, what if we shifted how you use yourself as, you know, as that person? How does that feel after a week or two? And if there's still no change, then I know this is really hard. I get that. I'm going to push us to try it harder, because I think staying where you are, it's just not working for you guys. Let's try something. And I'll go back to let's try. I'm going to ask, I could use your help. I'm going to go meet your mom. Let me know, what do you think might happen when I go? Mm. Okay. I want to try it anyway. And she might throw me out. You're right. She might actually throw me out on my ear and say, absolutely not. If she does, we'll learn something. And if she doesn't, we'll learn something. Because what I'm saying is, the two of you are not working. How about we introduce me at least and see what happens there? And so creating people like me to be that support for people, it doesn't need to be me. It just needs to be somebody who's got some skill and has decided to learn the skill. Yeah. Mm.
So at the end of the day then, Tipa, you know, what message you want people to take away from this discussion we've been having, these ideas that you've shared, these different little changes that people can make, right? And we're talking about sometimes just really tiny changes. What do you want people to take away from this?
This isn't rocket science, but there is a science and an art. And it's not earth-shattering, but it's relationship-breaking. if we don't figure it out soon enough. And I truly, after all these years, believe it's time. It's time not to have another generation experience what we've experienced. People in the sandwich generation are being squeezed. Do I want my children to experience with me what I'm experiencing with my mom or with my spouse? No. Well, then I have to own the change and quit being the squish and say, pause. Okay, this isn't really working for any of us. Let's pause and figure out what could. And I own it. And I'm saying, let's stand up and say, yeah, dementia's in the house. I wish it weren't. And we had someone at the program that we did come down from Ipoh, down to Kuala Lumpur, and stood up in front of over 100 people and say, I'm living with vascular dementia. And yet, when I first got the diagnosis, I thought that was over. But then I realized, but I had a granddaughter that was just about to be born, and my daughter said, I need your help, Mom. And suddenly my dementia was not the showstopper I thought it was. And so she, by her willingness to share her story in this forum, allowed others to look and see dementia a little differently. Mm. It's not one thing and one picture. And yet most people, when you ask them, what is dementia? They see someone sitting in a chair, unable to move, having problems with saliva control, having problems with movement control. They see the very end of the journey with poor quality support, or the very end of the journey when we've done all we can. And in fact, the ugly shell is on the outside. But in an oyster, you're familiar with oysters, right, Sue? What's on the inside of some oysters?
The pearl is inside.
Ah, and that's how we see the last state of dementia. What's on the outside is really ugly. But that amazing gem is still in there, ruled by reflexes. But when you can get past the shell with the right support, the shell opens for just a few moments and you see, wow, this human's still here and they still have value. And how I do what I do does matter.
Thank you so much for sharing today, Tipa.
You are so welcome. Thanks for offering the opportunity.
I've been speaking to dementia care expert Tipa Snow on this episode of Healthy Aging, and we've been talking about how we can approach dementia care differently. I'm Lim Suen, and this has been Health and Living BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.